lot of us will vouch that she imbibes more of the qualities than are commonly seen in even a serious practitioner. She's like really, truly walking the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and Bhakti Yoga. So she's been here even in Denver since
76.
So that was before I started, this body started breathing and you answered me. So she's been here, the backbone of the temple here for that long. Every day she goes out to try to share the wisdom of the teachings of the Vedas somewhere. She makes it a point, somehow, some way, she has to get out and share this, the wisdom of the teachings. And luckily she's going to speak tonight. So we'll let her lead the discussion. After that we'll have another chanting session. And then end, as always, with a nice, delicious vegetarian feast at the Govinda's restaurant over there. All around, super blissful evening. So, thank you, Mother. Let's give a loud Hari Bol, as the word they say.
Hari Bol!
Hari Bol to you. Because you are the devotees here. I'm just aspiring. And I thought I would continue from the theme that Dushta Krishna Prabhu was speaking about last night in Boulder. We had a nice Bhakti Spring Fest at the campus there, and he was talking a little bit about spring. So in the Bhagavad Gita, there's one verse that he mentioned where in the Opulence of the Absolute 10th chapter, it's a chapter that explains different vibhutis or opulences of Krishna, the Lord. And in this particular text, 35, the last part of the text, Krishna says, "Of seasons I am flower-bearing spring." So this is just Krishna Prabhu, and he was speaking last night about this, so I'm just kind of continuing from that point. Since it's springtime. So, yeah, the Sanskrit for this is Ritunam Kusumakaraha. Of seasons, I am flower-bearing spring. So, this season represents Krishna. Everything's, connected to God. But it's nice how Krishna himself mentions that connection with the season. And then I'll just read the last part of the purport where Prabhupada's mentioning spring. "Of course, spring is a season universally liked because it is neither too hot nor too cold, and the flowers and trees blossom and flourish. In spring, there are also many ceremonies commemorating Krishna's pastimes. Therefore, this is considered to be the most joyful of all seasons, and it is the representative of the Supreme Lord Krishna." So Krishna also comes as Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya explains that he's a gardener, and how many fruits can he pick as a lone gardener. Like if we have a big garden and we have lots of fruit trees and lots of vegetables and fruits to pick, how many can we pick alone? Obviously, if there's more gardeners, then there's more fruits that you can pick. So the Lord himself is saying that we should all be gardeners. And that means that we should water the devotional creeper that we all have. The soul is sometimes not manifesting that creeper in our life. In other words, there's a creeper of devotion that sprouts and grows from the soul all the way back to the spiritual sky. And the watering process for the creeper is the chanting of the holy names. So as gardeners, we need to water with the kirtan. In other words, the chanting that we're doing is helping us to take care of this creeper of devotion. And the thing is, just like when you have plants in a garden, if they flourish, then you see that they're very beautiful and the garden is healthy and you reap the results of the gardening. So with the chanting process, we can reap the results of a devotional life through continued chanting and kirtan. This type of gardening is essential for the soul. And in spring, people like to garden. And in springtime, for the devotees of the Lord, it's a time to commemorate all kinds of festivities that cultivate the soul. So specifically, I'm thinking of kirtan, because this is one of our main branches of devotional service, main thing that we do to bring forth the ever-fresh spiritual life that the soul is always has, but is maybe not manifested. In the wintertime, in the ground, the garden looks totally unmanifest and looks dead. And then all of a sudden, like a miracle, in the spring, the very same land of that garden looks so beautiful. And so in the winter season of our existence, when things are not manifesting, like the very love and devotion and all these things from the soul that we would like to manifest, when these things are not so much manifesting, there's more of this winter period of life. And then in the spring, when through kirtan, the soul is nourished, then this very essence begins to manifest more and more and sprout. So one thing is, the chanting of the holy names, it seems repetitive, and it doesn't seem sometimes so ever fresh, like a garden produces fresh vegetables and fruits, and everything's ever fresh. So through kirtan, sometimes, because we're maybe too much on the mental platform, the process of kirtan doesn't seem as fresh as it could be, because we're not perhaps more on the soul platform. So in gardening, it's best when taking care of the soul through kirtan to not listen to the mind when it's not a friend. The mind can say so many things. Oh, this kirtan or this japa meditation, this chanting of the holy names is boring because it's just repeating over and over and over and over again. Same thing. And it doesn't seem ever fresh. So that is what you call the mental platform. So the gardener wants to be on the refreshed platform, the green platform, the enlivened platform, and that has to come from the level of the soul. And so when we come together and chant together, then we experience that more. We feel, you know, mantra meditation, even though it's repetition, it is ever fresh, it's ever green, it's no different than Krishna himself, who says he's flower-bearing spring. He is always new and newer and newer and newer. So therefore, kirtan, chanting, needs to always have that newer and newer freshness about it to really keep us attracted to it. And so therefore, we want to guard against these different things that get in the way of gardening nicely. You know, there's different things that can ruin the garden or don't produce the fruits that we're really looking for in the gardening process. So that's a danger. Like, a lot of times we get bored with mantra meditation. And so that's kind of like, for a gardener, if he sees different or she sees different things happening in the garden, you know, pests are getting in into the garden and you want to take care of them in a natural way, but they're eating the plants and, you know, you're having problems with the garden, you want to tend to it. So in kirtan, we want to tend to any kind of problems that get in the way of flourishing, you know, that the soul can flourish in kirtan. So therefore, we want to watch out for these things that, like mind saying, oh, this is not an ever fresh activity. You know, it's the same old thing all the time, you know, Hare Krishna, mantra, same old thing. And in our lives, in our everyday living, we can see that sometimes we don't think our life is ever fresh. We don't see it very spring-like, we don't see it very green or enlivening, because our perspective on the everyday activities is perhaps falling short of that level of soul. So therefore in association, devotees can encourage each other, people can encourage each other to see the ever freshness of kirtan and don't get enveloped in the traps of the mental platform that, you know, the mind dictating, well, you know, who needs to do this? Or it's just, you know, it's the same old thing, same old all the time. But through knowledge, we understand that it's ever fresh. And so if I'm not experiencing the ever-freshness, the spring green-like freshness of kirtan, then I need to get back to my gardening, find out, you know, what am I doing wrong? Am I over-watering, not watering enough? Or what is the problem that's getting in the way of experiencing that freshness? And there's so much to appreciate in mantra meditation, that in this time of year we can see that there's many opportunities to chant the holy names in public or privately or in a small group, and we can feel very much enlivened, just like a garden that just starts to blossom after a long winter. So we're actually meant to be blossoming souls. And we can do that, but we have to apply ourselves to mantra in such a way that we get the proper results and effect of mantra meditation. So just a few thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I was just wondering what you meant by overwatering.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes the seeds will drown, and they can drown easily by overwatering. So anything that gets in the way, you know, covers over our creeper of devotion, you could kind of related to that, you know, overwatering. Maybe, you know, you went overboard with material activities, or you ate too much, or, you know what I mean?
Austerity or something?
Kind of like went overboard with something, and then it interfered with your life of kirtan. You know, maybe you just got too involved in other activities, you went overboard, and you didn't absorb yourself as much in kirtan as you could have. So, something that, you know, gets in the way. And certainly overwatering would get in the way. Did anyone else?
You were talking about not getting repetitive with seeing freshness every time you get in touch with the holy name or the spiritual activity. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that? Like, sometimes though we are not conscious because of our, some much distractions, we tend to feel ill. So how should our attitude be, even though we are not experiencing it, we just desire, just want to hear more.
Yeah, that's just what you were saying, attitude. Like just to have the attitude to want to experience the sacredness of kirtan, the bliss, the service, you know, you can see it as service to Krishna, to everyone, to all the living entities, to chant the holy names and the service to all. And, you know, having a motivation and an attitude that is Krishna conscious, it helps to bring out the real essence of the mantra, you know, having that proper attitude, service attitude. So just by that, Krishna will help and make things so fresh and happy just through good, cultivating good attitude. When you figure that all miseries, we were just reading about that today, just by being in contact with the Lord's appearance and activities, His holy name, all miseries can be eradicated.
Material life, you know, and then I try to remember that I have to do it for Krishna, but not really quite sure how to, like, do things for Krishna. You know, it's like, it's easy to, like, come to the temple and, like, wash some dishes or something, because you know that's for Krishna, but it's a lot harder to, like, plan out your career for Krishna, or you know what I mean? It's like, I find it pretty challenging to, like, have that mind state throughout the day. Try to be absorbed even if I chant in the morning, you know, and then like read and like try to think about Krishna, but it's so like powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, you can see the mantra is asking to serve with love. So just by dedicating life to chanting and distributing the holy names, then you get realization how to do everything in life. Just through that foundation, then everything comes, you know, just like you take care of the garden and take care of all the beginning parts of, you know, the season and the gardening, and then everything sprouts nicely. So just through one's dedication to kirtan as life and soul, then everything else that you're doing in life will sprout nicely, you know, from that dedication to kirtan. It'll all come.
There's a verse in their chapter that the transcendence is situated in acts of the transcendence or the Supreme Lord?
Transcendence.
Transcendence is an act of sacrifice. So Vishakhamata, she was talking about this wheel of sacrifice, and how if we're not part of that, then we're absorbing ourselves in vanity in a life. so long as, so even just the prescribed duties, like Prabhupada said, we don't see Arjuna sitting on the battlefield doing puja or, you know, brahminical sadhana. He was very carefully, you know, stringing his arrows, figuring out the phalanxes of the army, and super absorbed in just, you know, the martial dealings. But, you know, in the 8th chapter, Krishna says, always think of me and carry out your duties. So it's not that the carrying out the duties was like, you know, 50th down the list. It's think of Krishna, and it's right next to Krishna, you carry out your duties. So practically it's almost not different than thinking of Krishna. And so the prescribed duties that one's engaged in under the guidance of the spiritual master, just like Omkar Swami today, his spiritual master gave him one instruction, just to keep a sense of integrity in one's character. And it dealt with, like, Lakshmi, you know, with money. So it's so nice when you're under that guidance, then you can deal with the material energy in a way that normally would be very fearful, especially something like money, let's say, for a brahmachari to have to deal very intimately with, like, money and figuring out this and that. You're very entangled. It's almost easier not to even deal with it. But then to actually take responsibility and deal with it under the guidance of the spiritual master, you feel very safe, because you know, like, they gave you an instruction how to deal with it. So similarly, like, you know, every day going to work, if there's somehow, if it's being done under guidance of guru, shiksha guru, then one feels a certain safety. One feels that it's part of their Krishna consciousness, just to, like, expertly do their household work, take care of the family, go to work, punch in, all those details that seem to, like, be very mundane. If it's done under that guidance, and if it's engaged as yajna, then it's not different than Krishna. Then one gets purified. Especially the fruits that come from that work, but even the work itself is a situated act. The transcendence is situated acts of sacrifice. So, but it can be fearful if there's no connection to guru, if there's no connection to sacrifice, if there's no connecting the fruits of one's work to the purpose of Krishna. Then it can be entangling and fearful.
You can see that anyone who's dedicated to the holy names will get that mercy from Gornitai to be able to understand what to do, when to do, how to do, where to go, what to say, you know, through that direction. Because of that connection to Super Soul, then you get the desire to take shelter of someone who can help you in everyday affairs, and et cetera, just by that connection to, you know, chanting and being happy through chanting.
Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, when he spoke of the Ahamosha, there's another verse that says, I'm a healing herb, in the 9th chapter. So a lot of times it's, wow, there's always, you know, different herbs growing, different plants growing. But he actually said this healing herb is Krishna's name. That for the sadaka, when Krishna says, I am the healing herb, they literally take that Krishna is actually, Krishna's name is the healing herb. And so for the Paramahamsa or realized soul, even in illness, ultimately take shelter of the holy name as the ultimate medicine. So I thought that was just the level of faith that he was expressing towards the holy name. I am the healing herb. Mm-hmm. Something Prabhupada said really nice recently too, in regards to flowers, that you're talking about flowers. And he said, it's a lecture called Nature Study, Chapter 7, Text 9, I am the fragrance of the earth. And he says, so just from this earth is coming this plant, and then you get this rose. And he said, just for an artist to make this rose, it's very, very challenging. Like, I have a friend who blows glass, and just to make like a glass rose, it takes a lot of like artistic intelligence, you know, or to even paint one, you know, to get all the 3D effects of the rose. It's very, very intricate. So how much intelligence it takes, first only to grow a glass rose, to paint one on canvas, to make one out of ceramic or porcelain, or make one out of silk even, like a nice silk rose. I mean, I couldn't figure out where to start, you know, how to make like a nice silk rose. Although when we see it in the store, we just think, oh, it's a cheap silk rose or whatever. So what to say of the intelligence of that person who in the fragrance of the fragrance is already there in the earth, and it comes out as this plant, and like you said, it's this ever-fresh, blooming substance. And then Prabhupada say, and there's no intelligence behind that. Fools, and you know, you say, we're just a rascal, you know. I mean, you know, you're saying that it took you, you're giving so much credit to the human intelligence to create all these imitation roses. You will not give any credit to that person who has made this amazing rose. And so he would say, just nature study, and you'll see Krishna. You'll see Krishna with his magic working. And there's a few nice examples pop up. It's about flowers.
I was going to say that in the purport or something, that all the original everything is Krishna. So like the original, the most purest, original, freshest smell of anything is represents Krishna.
Yeah, it's fascinating because there's so many varieties of flowers. Like in the winter, like you said, everything's stagnant. And then suddenly in the spring, like you have hyacinths come up and tulips come, and then each have a unique fragrance. Who designed that? Why isn't it just all bland? Just oneness. And there's all these unique scents, and certain flowers come up at a certain time right before the others. It's all just orchestrated so nicely. And yet people say, well, that's just by chance or something. Not even appreciating the artist behind that, the unseen artist. And then Prabhupada say, and Krishna's smile. That's another nice one too. You do not see Krishna's smile when you see that rose bloom. This is Krishna smiling. He says, you cannot see God smile. You simply look at a rose, you simply see a flower bloom. There is Krishna smiling. So Prabhupada is, it's not just like Krishna's face on the altar. Of course, Prabhupada's seen that everywhere. But even when the pure devotee sees that flower bloom, they actually see Krishna smiling. They don't just see some biological substances made up of this or that. Prabhupada seeing Krishna's smell directly. So it was as if the Prabhupada was very absorbed in appreciating flowers.
Do you think it's related to that Bhagavatam verse where it says most of learning and material energy is with the rat roots smile?
Yeah, I don't know if it's directly, but this is like on a morning walk, some type of conversation, and someone would say like that, show me God, and say, here we go, just look at this flower. And it's just a few reflections on your point about the spring, and else. Not to take it for granted. Whenever you do see wildflowers, can't say another about flowers? There's another pastime with Prabhupada, and he had a bunch of opulent flowers on him. Can't remember who tells the memories. Do you remember? Was it Mula Prakriti?
Oh, it's in
there.
Was it? Wildflowers.
They had all these opulent flowers, and then he took all of them off.
He took the forest flowers?
And then he put the forest flower garlands on, and he appreciated it so much. He said, wildflowers.
I think they named them in New Vrindavan.
Oh yeah, all these parties of devotees were
there. Airport.
The airport parties and
at the airport. They were giving them all the garlic.
Okay, so then here was like this simple little garlic in New Vrindavan. The Prabhupada took all of them off. He put the wildflowers on and he appreciated.
He said, these are like forest flowers like in Vrindavan or something like that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of nice wildflowers just even in the city. You can go up and down like grape hyacinths, and you can bring them to Prabhupada. You can actually bring them and offer them. It's much nicer than offering these flowers, if we can. Because the flowers we get from South America, they're just synthetically grown. So whatever flowers we can collect, it's very meaningful, actually. And you'll feel a fresh devotional benefit when you make that little offering of a flower to Radha Govinda.
I feel that too. I was offering my prayer the other day and I picked up, because it feels that it's so natural here. And I was sitting for meditation, I was sitting for prayers. And I took some of that, it just felt so awesome.
Yeah, there's little flowers growing along the sidewalk.
Yeah, everywhere. Yeah, just, you know, in the meadows, anywhere. It's such amazing.
Collect a few flowers, you can bring them to your home, or you can even bring them to a pujari and they'll offer them to the deity's feet. Yeah. And you feel a real freshness of reciprocation.
Absolutely.
You know, any little bud that's, even that little buds, and even blades of grass, even fresh grass you can offer to the deities, fresh leaves from trees.
Yeah.
Anything budding like that, it's very auspicious. Krishna learned that in the Bhagavatam, fourth canto of Bhima's prayers, these type of offerings are very nice. Whatever's available in the surrounding environment.
Yeah, in India they offer grass for Ganesha. Yeah. He loves it. And they put it on his head, so they look at us humans are nothing compared to grass, because he puts it on his head. He loves it that much.
Probably need to inspire all these flower power
kind of blossom
stories.
Jivadatta Swami, in the memories he recounts, he brought a rose to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada smelled it and he liked it so much, he said, and I think he was just coming out of an illness, and he told Jivadatta Maharaj, if you bring me one flower like this for a week, it will increase the longevity of my life. What an instruction. Like, Guru Maharaj told me to bring him a flower every day.
I think it was on Memories too, or maybe it was in one of the Prabhupada books. There was one devotee, she made a big garment out of some really delicate flowers, and then Prabhupada wore it, and he wore it for the whole day, but they never got old. And I think he gave it back to her or something. It was like just as fresh as when she made it. And like, usually those flowers, they wouldn't last so long. Yeah. But by Prabhupada wearing it.
So, Tulsi Vallabha Prabhu said you would lead us in the last pure time tonight. Alright,
we're all these flower people.
Yeah, flower people.
Love flowers.
Yeah,